FIFA is considering a move to holding the Men's World Cup competition every 2 years rather than four. It's carrying out a feasibility study led by former Arsenal manager Arsene Wenger. Over half of FIFA's 210 national associations have backed the study into the idea. The move has brought condemnation from some corners, with commentators saying it's just a cash grab, but it has its supporters as well. New Zealand footballer and former All White Ryan Nelson was in Doha last week as a player representative to hear FIFA outline its proposed plan for the change.
Well, there's two really main things, and it's the change of the calendar for international games or international windows. At the moment, it's five, and there's five windows, and it's very stop-go, players travelling all around the place and everything like that. And so it's very outdated, and so they want to change that. And then they also want to change and look into the potential for a biannual World Cup instead of the traditional 4 years.
Can we focus on the biannual World Cup every 2 years? It sounds a lot for such a major event. What would be the impact for national teams in trying to manage it?
Well, for about 185 countries, it would benefit them immensely. You know, there's only a certain elite at the moment, certain elite countries and most of them in UEFA that get, you know, annual money from UEFA for the Champions League and for European Cups that have built infrastructure and coaching systems and talent IDs and all that. And their levels are going up and up and up. But the actual global game is actually really stagnated. And, you know, there's 133 countries that have never been to a World Cup. There's a lot of countries that just do not have the infrastructure to be able to even produce players that could even compete to get to a World Cup. And FIFA have seen this, and they've done a very, very big study on it, a two-year study where they said the potential revenues from an extra World Cup, there will be a lot more costs, but there will be extra revenues, will be put back into the global game. So that can increase the playing field of these 133 countries that have never been, but also probably another 30 or 40, that can increase the level playing field so that they at least can compete with some of the elite countries who've been doing a fantastic job, but they've been financed by doing it.
So for the critics who say this is just a cash grab for FIFA, you're of the mind that it is a cash pool that can be redistributed. The question everyone will ask, especially given FIFA's somewhat tortured history at times, is how transparent that will be and how confident people will be that that is how the extra revenue is used.
Yeah, and look, it is a really good question. I totally understand that. I don't think they've got a very good track record on the transparency process that they had in the past kind of regimes, I'd say. But the new president, and everything's on, you know, everything's transparent right now. Every dollar they've spent, you can go online and you can go on FIFA's website and actually see it. So there will be a transparency process. There will be, FIFA will even be auditing every single country pretty much to where that revenue will go, and they'll provide best practices and everything like that. And there will be a process that has to be, you know, withheld in terms of absolutely in terms of the transparency and what will go on. But what it does is, to your point, it kind of transfers a bit of the power that at the moment is kind of sitting with kind of some super countries, and the rest of the globe can't kind of compete at this present moment. And it's not good for the global game. We call it the world's game, but really is it? You know, when you say there's 133 countries that have never even made it, it's, you know, China and India, China's been once and they never scored a goal. India's never been. It's 3 billion people right there. And all these countries that, all these markets that just don't have the infrastructure. And that's what FIFA want to build them up. So in X amount of years, that if you were born in France and you're Mbappe, you're one of the best players in the world, or if you're born in Ghana or you're born in New Zealand or you're born in India, you have the exact same level kind of infrastructure and development process that you would if you were born in England or France.
Well, let's look at what the impact will be, though, on the current cohort of players and that calendar. Because every 2 years, goodness, what's going to happen with the qualifying fixtures? They're going to be almost permanent.
Well, that's where the calendar would change. And so, Arsene Wenger and the FIFA group, they did a lot of studies about you know, they're playing too much right now. It's not like, you know, just because another World Cup comes on, even if it wasn't there, they're going to play games. They play too many games right now. They travel too much right now. There's too much of a toll on the players. This way, yes, there's another tournament, but they actually play less games, less qualifying, less friendlies, less windows. So there's two kind of options that they want to do. One in October, where you literally play all your qualifying games in October, and about 5 weeks, and then you're done. And you're back to your clubs and concentrate on with your clubs till the summer, and then you have a tournament, and then you have a mandatory rest of 25 days. So clubs are very happy, right, because they don't have the stop-go. They don't have all their players travelling all around the world and all that. They know they're going to be away for a certain period of time. They play their games. They're meaningful, qualifying games, so the fans are happy, and then they're back to the clubs. That's option one. Option two is they do that in October and maybe a window in the February, March, a smaller window. But, you know, cut down the five windows a lot, so it's less travel, less games, and cut out the meaningless friendlies. And that's the big thing. Nobody wants to watch these days. The young people these days, the people that are moving on, they don't want to watch anything that doesn't have any meaning. And nobody wants to play. Players don't want to play in games that are just benefiting outside kind of entities. So that's the reason for it. It actually means less games, less travel, and more rest.
Who benefits financially from the friendlies? Is that not FIFA? Is it local associations or is it external entities?
Yeah, local teams will organise international fixtures to respond to sponsors' demands or, you know, fan demands or things like that, or contract demands that they've already got to fill a window, a coach's demand. Very few actually make money. Only really the elite. The only really top 20, 30, 40 countries in the world make money out of these friendly windows. A lot of countries don't even use them because it's just too costly to even have them. So, and the players don't benefit. They play a friendly, meaningful game to, you know, fit some international kind of calendar where the sponsors or TV, the rights have already been sold to that federation. So the players are just moving around, you know, travelling around crazy, mentally and physically draining, so that certain federations, who, by the way, it's not accusing them or anything like that, they're just doing good business, right? They're just trying to make a profit that then they can build into their infrastructure. But it doesn't make sense for, you know, 150-odd countries that don't really, it actually hurts them, it costs them, where where it comes down to it, the players get affected. As I say, you shorten the windows, you lessen the windows. It's obviously less travel. They're at one point of time, you know, in an area where the coaches can actually work with them. The clubs know they're going to be away for this amount of time. They can prepare. You can recover, and then you can, you know, as I said, it'll be a qualifier. It won't be a friendly. It's not just a token game. It actually will have something on it, so which will be a lot appealing for the fans.
The impact on other events, though, some's pointing out that if it clashes, if it's every 2 years, it clashes at some point with the Women's World Cup. It clashes with the Olympics. I want to come back in the moment to some of the other leagues around, whether it's the club leagues or the national leagues, you know, the FA Cup or the European Championship. But if you're talking about the overall growth of the game in all its forms, is there a risk that it overshadows or crowds out other events?
Possibly, but it's the most prestigious tournament in the world. And you know, everybody will say, I think you kind of mentioned an early question, oh, you know, it might dilute the proposition or something like that. I would say that's, you know, the NBA, the Super Bowl, the Champions League, the Ryder Cups every 2 years. It's not time that signifies kind of prestige. It's actually quality of the tournament. And if you were going to do it by time, you know, saying that it's going to be more prestigious on time, then every tournament would be 4 years or 5 years or 10 years to make it even more prestigious. So it's more about just the quality of the tournament. And the quality of the tournament, the World Cup, will always be quality, whether it's 10 years, 4 years, 2 years. It's the World Cup. It's the greatest tournament. Now, the Women's World Cup, Football World Cup, they're having the same conversations right now. So that will be kind of, you know, obviously amended and changed as well, so they complement each other. In terms of Champions League and everything like that, that's a club competition that UEFA has, but that will not affect it because it'll actually help it. It'll help all the clubs because the players won't be travelling internationally as much because of less windows. So that'll be, hopefully the quality of those kind of competitions will go up with less injuries and fresher kind of players. Probably the European Cups or the Copa Americas or something like that, but they will probably in time go to biennial as well. So you'll probably end up getting, you know, a European Cup one summer, then a World Cup the next, and then European. And then during those October and potentially February, March, you just get qualifiers. So just like this year, right? Like in 21, we had the European qualifier. And next year, we're going to have a World Cup. No different. I mean, nobody's saying, oh my God, the World Cup's come too close. It's too quick. It's next year. Same thing.
So come back, Ryan, because what's counterintuitive is that you can increase the frequency without increasing the player demands. What you've told us is what goes are these low value to the players anyway, friendlies, and these five windows altering. Can you calculate how much more or less players will be playing, or is it more about how much they will be travelling?
It's both, actually. And these are like, you know, like all your questions you have was what I had as well when I got first kind of introduced to this on the panels and that. And you kind of think, you know, because change is very difficult, right, to kind of look at it. But once the stats kind of come down and what's it, and come in front of you and the facts and the proposals, they'll play less games. The windows at the moment, even if there's no meaningful qualifier in there, they get occupied by friendly internationals that don't mean anything, which means players have to travel. Their minds aren't really on it. It's not a big deal for them, but they still have to travel. They still have to go there. They still have to go through the routines and everything like this. Here, you've got less games, but there's a qualifier on every single time you play. So it means something. So that's great for the media. It's great for the broadcast. It's great for the fans, right? There's meaningful games. And then the tournament. Every player you talk to wants to play in meaningful tournaments and have the potential to win. And, you know, whether it's the Champions League every year or Super Bowls or NBA Championships or the Ryder Cups every 2 years, it does not diminish. They want to win that even though it's annual. And it will be the same as the World Cup. You ask any player. I spoke to Winston Reid and Chris Wood, and they were like, oh, my God. We could have gone to World Cups every – unbelievable. Because they'll end up having to play anyway. And then you get a mandatory rest afterwards, which you know, the clubs can't touch. They have a mandatory rest. So they play less games, they travel less, and they get a mandatory rest. And for that, they also get meaningful games and World Cup competitions. And with all that potential, it gets drained down into the global kind of growth of the game. All these other countries that the World Cup's so prestigious, it's so far away from them. You know, like, there's so many talented countries out there that don't have the infrastructure or the talent ID or the coaching systems but they've got talented athletes, but they'll never get to a World Cup.
Ryan Nelson. Well, this proposal will be discussed by the member nations at the organisation's World Congress on September the 30th this year. The decision will ultimately come down to a vote by all 211 member nations of FIFA.